De la revolución del mundo.
Justice by any means
necessary.
This program is brought to you by Haymarket Books as part of the Socialism 2024 program. You can hear more recordings from the conference by subscribing to the Socialism Conference podcast feed. Many video recordings are also available at socialismconference.org. If you enjoy these recordings, you should join us at Socialism 2025, which will be held in Chicago next summer, July 3rd through the 6th, 2025. If you are ready to put ideas into action and get organized with others from across the country and the world, make a plan with your organization and your friends to come to the Socialism Conference.
Hi, everyone. Hi, my name is Carlos, and I'm part of the political education and programming teams at Haymarket Books, and I'm also part of the Socialism Conference Organizing Committee. Thank you. I wanted to start off with a few quick announcements and acknowledgments. First, we have a comrade who is dealing with a health issue who could use some company and assistance at O'Hare Airport tonight. If you are on the 8 p.m. United flight to LaGuardia or any United flight this evening and are willing to help, please find a member of our team, anyone with a yellow badge, and let them know that you're willing to help and we'll be getting you connected. Also, for folks who haven't had a chance to stop by the bookstore will remain open for a little bit after the closing of the plenary for some last minute finds. So if you want to start looking through your suitcase to see how much more you can fit, now's the time. And then also, once folks are wrapping up the book room, there's always volunteers welcome if anyone wants to help break that down. You can just alert any one of our team members there. On behalf of our entire team, I wanted to thank you all so much for attending Socialism 2024 and participating in what has been a transformational weekend of reflection, debate, strategy, and community. For folks who don't know, this conference is entirely funded by registrations and small-scale donations, and this allows the conference to operate independently and is essential to sustaining it as what we believe is a vital space for radical politics. If you're in a position to do so, we would appreciate if you could make a small donation to help sustain the Socialism Conference for years to come, which you can do so by visiting our website or scanning the QR code in the handouts in your seats. I also want to make a reminder, like we said in the opening plenary, that Socialism 2025 will be taking place here in Chicago 4th of July weekend, July 3rd through the 6th. So if you had barbecue plans, you can cancel them and make your new plans. I wanted to say that the conference would not be possible without the work of many, many people. And I want to take a moment to share our gratitude. I want to thank the hotel staff at the Hyatt for their tireless work this weekend. For making sure we had access to rooms and making our rooms as accessible as they could be. I also want to thank the more than 90 co-sponsoring organizations that helped build the conference, organize panels, and help volunteer to keep this conference safe and invigorating. In the end, well over 2,300 organizers and activists registered to attend this year, making it the largest conference ever. And each and every single one of you here and each of your organizations played a crucial role in making that possible. I also want to thank our AV team for your incredible work, making sure that mics were working, the recorders were on, that live streams were going out, so anyone who couldn't come to Chicago could see some of the programming virtually from their home. I want to thank our ASL and Spanish language interpreters. Thank you. Yes, absolutely give it up for them. Yeah, we We hope to make this conference accessible to all, and your work here is an essential part of it. We also want to thank every single conference attendee for wearing your mask throughout the weekend. As we see the largest waves of COVID-19 in the last 4 years, all while those in power have completely left us behind, especially the most vulnerable among us, it has never been more true that it is we who keep us safe. So thank you all for wearing your mask throughout the weekend, for testing. I want to thank all of our speakers, facilitators, and volunteers. This year, we had more than 150 sessions, workshops, and meetups in our program, and we thank all of you for helping us shape it to be the conference that it is. Thanks. I want to thank the childcare staff at Camp Tortuguita for providing a safe and secure and fun environment. Thank you. This year, our childcare program featured a drag story hour, musical performances, and even yoga. So it wasn't just you on Saturday and Sunday that were doing yoga. It's truly, our childcare staff is truly one of the backbones of this conference. So please give it up for them one more time. And lastly, I want to thank our staff at Haymarket Books for making this conference possible. For one final special announcement, I wanna invite my friend and colleague GOT to come up here to deliver an announcement.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
I'm Jyoti, and I wanted to share a little announcement. This past February, Haymarket Books announced the inaugural recipients of a new initiative to recognize, elevate, and support the necessary, important work of talented poets, fiction writers, and creative nonfiction writers impacted by the carceral state. 20 writers this year were honored with the Writing Freedom Fellowship. And over the past several months, we've been meeting with them, virtually gathering, some of them calling in from the inside to connect with others in the cohort. The works of these 20 writers moved our team tremendously. And we know, that so many of the people in this room are already invested in the worlds that these writers are shaping and building through their work. Whether you attended yesterday's session on the artistic commons in prison, whether you share an investment in the role of art in movement work, or have learned from the necessary lessons and insights from our incarcerated comrades. And we trust that you will see the powerful work of these writers gather force in the coming years. And so I just wanted to share the names of our 2024 Writing Freedom Fellows. Our fellows are C. Fausto Cabrera, Zeke Caligiuri, Star Davis, Stephanie Echeverria Fenn, D. Farmer, Victoria Newton Ford, Kiana Harris, Quinetta Harris, Kenneth Hartman, Marcelo Hernandez Castillo, Qantas Conquest, John J. Lennon, Arthur Longworth, Ian Manuel, Ahmed Nagy, Katie Schmid, Michelle Scott, Crystal Wilkinson, and Stevie Wilson. So like Carlos said, the bookstore is going to be open for a little longer. You can actually find some of their books in the bookstores. Hope you check some of their work out. But even more excitingly, we have 10 of our Writing Freedom Fellows who had the freedom to travel join us this weekend at Socialism. We've been so thrilled to have them here, and I'd love to ask them to stand if they, if they're able, just so we can share a little more love and applause for you and your work. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jyoti, and thank you to all our Writing Freedom Fellows. These last 11 months have brought unimaginable devastation and despair into an everyday reality. We've seen loss of life in Gaza at a scale none of us can even begin to fathom. We have also seen resilience and solidarity from those on the front lines of the fight against the genocide in Gaza and the West Bank, to those who are standing up for justice in their workplaces, campuses, and their communities. Our fights for liberation are linked in countless ways, and our movements are never stronger than when they are guided by solidarity and the vision of a better world. As we close out this Socialism Conference weekend, we're looking forward to reflecting on what it takes for movements to deepen those solidarities, thicken relationships, and grow into steadfast forces on the road to achieving lasting liberation. We're hoping to start that process today with this panel of incredible organizers and thinkers. But before I introduce our speakers, I did want to ask that we take a moment of silence in memory of Rafat Alarir and all of the martyrs of Gaza. Thank you. Free, free Palestine.
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 From the river to the sea.
From the river to the sea.
Palestine will be free. Thank you.
Palestine will be free.
Our first speaker for our closing plenary through Steadfast Movements to Liberation is Rosana Rodriguez. Rosana Rodriguez Sanchez is the alderwoman of Chicago's 33rd Ward. Please join me in welcoming Rosana. Yeah, any other 33rd Warders in the house?
Thank you so much, everybody. I was asked to open this plenary today, and I wanted to start with the beautiful words of the incredible Nicaraguan poet, Gioconda Belli. She said that solidarity is the tenderness of peoples. La solidaridad es la ternura de los pueblos. I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to be here today with all of you after a weekend of imagining a society that is rooted in care and humanity. My name is Rosana Rodriguez Sanchez. I am the elder person of Chicago's 33rd Ward, and I'm also a founding member of 33rd Ward Working Families. I'm also part of the incredible ecosystem of struggle that fights like hell for a better city of Chicago every day. I was born and raised in colonized Puerto Rico, and it was there that I learned about community, solidarity, and resistance. When I was 6 years old, my community came together to fight for water. We were not getting any water after a drought that lasted over a month. The water from the river that served our community was redirected to a U.S. Navy base in the town of Ceiba, the base from where the Navy bombed our neighbors from the island town of Vieques to practice for war. My father, alongside other neighbors, came together to organize community meetings to discuss the issue. These discussions ended in protests and direct actions that got us our water back. This was my first encounter with organized resistance. And that same year, the neighbors came together to create a community festival, El Festival de la Pana, or the Breadfruit Festival, to celebrate a wild fruit that fed us abundantly. I have a vivid memory of that first festival. My father working all day with our neighbors, building food stands, picking up boxes, chopping wood, starting the fire in the fogón, and my mother in the kitchen cooking with many of our neighbors, surrounded by wood smoke. They did that work with so much love and sharing a joy in resistance that I still carry with me. I remember that all the babies were put in play packs, pack and plays inside the little community center that my neighbors fought for. Everyone knew that the babies were there, and people in the community took turns to watch them so parents could work in the festival and also have fun. I felt safe there, surrounded by people who cared so deeply about each other and our community. There was no police. No station even close to the top of that mountain. The only police that came up the mountain were undercover, working on surveilling our community during COINTELPRO. Other than that, my interactions with police took place later when I started going to protest and join picket lines. The safety of my community was created by our community. This weekend, the Breadfruit Festival celebrated its 39th anniversary. There is still no police station at the top of the mountain. I've been thinking a lot about those memories of community care as I do the work of imagining how to keep each other safe, how we develop the structures of care needed so that we can fight like hell for our humanity while preserving and protecting our ability to humanize ourselves and each other. How do we fight the ruling class that dehumanizes us while allowing ourselves to practice that humanity? And just like when I was 6 years old, the answer has always been, we do that together and organized. In the last few years, we have seen a ruling class pushing aggressively to the right through both the Republican and Democratic parties. They also have the memory of what happens when working class people across identities come to organize together. So they do the most to keep us fighting each other, blaming each other for the hardships that the capitalist system is designed to create. We just witnessed the blatant anti-immigrant narratives at the DNC, the complete disregard for our Palestinian siblings while funding a genocide against them, the nationalist law and order discourse that glorifies militarism, imperialism, and punishment. We have seen the assault on our bodily autonomy and our ability to have an abortion or seek gender-affirming care, a housing crisis and rising rents that have left people who work full-time homeless. And as we try to fight this grinder of a system, we feel the exhaustion in our bones often. But as our brilliant sister, Mariam Kaba, said, hope is a discipline. And there is so much we can transform together when we organize. I want to share with you a few examples of beautiful, disciplined work that gives me hope and energy to keep fighting and imagining the world we all deserve. As migrants started arriving in Chicago by the thousands and sent to police stations to wait for shelter, we called community members who were trying to help, and we created one of the most comprehensive mutual aid efforts I've ever witnessed in Albany Park. I call it the People's OEMC, or the People's Emergency Management Department. Over 100 people came together to support migrant families in our community. We created a signal system with multiple channels to coordinate support, and when I tell you, it was a dashboard with channels for wellness. We coordinated transportation of people to doctor's appointments, to emergency rooms, to get medicine. We had a doctor that volunteered in the channel, and we did consults with this doctor so that we knew if it was just an over-the-counter matter or if we needed to transport. We had a legal channel to transport people to legal appointments, to take them to court. We had a special event channel to celebrate mothers and fathers and back-to-school events. When I tell you that this was the People's OEMC, I am not exaggerating. It was an incredible effort that ended up in the creation of the Community Care Collective. And I am so incredibly proud of that work. When the city said that they were going to open a shelter in the 33rd Ward, in a moment when meetings were being held, where people would come and shout anti-immigrant rhetoric, we decided to do a community meeting to invite people who wanted to help. And we went into the shelter and we started doing needs assessments, and we realized that the private company that was hired to do that was not doing their job. And we engaged them and we showed them how do you do a model of care. And we ended up with a collaborative agreement between the private company and the mutual aid effort, where they would do the needs assessment, put it in an Excel sheet, and we would sit on the other side and meet those requests. And it was incredible what happened with that. After a year, the collaborative was sunsetted, and now we are using the same system to support unhoused neighbors in the 33rd ward and seek support from one another to make sure that people are okay. The 33rd Ward Working Families hosted a fundraiser recently for the Chicago Abortion Fund. And understanding the critical life-saving work they have been doing is really a beautiful experience. Coordinating thousands of journeys for people in need of abortion care across state lines, from transportation to accommodation to childcare and medical care, Chicago Abortion Fund has been a beacon of life-saving solidarity for so many people. In the city of Chicago, we also came together to demand that Chicago take a position against Israel's genocide on Palestinians. It was brutal work, and it took so much organizing, but people were determined to raise our voices, and a coalition of Palestinian, Jewish, Black, Latine, Asian, and communities of faith came together to pass a resolution demanding that Chicago stands for a ceasefire, and we won it. And here in Chicago, people continue to organize and raise their voices for an arms embargo and a free Palestine. We have also been fighting for a city model that moves us away from punishment and in the direction of care for the last 4 years. The Treatment Not Trauma campaign has been led by a Black and Brown coalition that came together to create public and integrated structures of mental health care. In the wake of the murder of George Floyd by police and the protests that follow, Black and Brown people came together to imagine a new way to tend to our communities through the lens of abolition. Together, we wrote policy to merge the efforts to reopen public mental health clinics that Daly and Rahm Emanuel closed, and to create an integrated mental health crisis response model to prevent, address, and provide follow-up care to people experiencing mental health crisis. After over a decade of fighting, we are now reopening 2 clinics, expanding service hours, adding staff, and expanding the reach of the crisis response. We are also taking police completely out of the model. All of this has happened because of steadfast, disciplined organizing and never-ending acts of solidarity. And we need to continue to organize wherever we are, our block, our community, our schools, our workplace. We are all interconnected. We care for each other by putting together workshops to teach each other how to stop the bleed or provide survivor support to someone who lost a loved one to gun violence. Learning how to use Narcan to protect people from an overdose, but also organizing a union at a nonprofit so that the people who provide the care can have a living wage, benefits, and pay time off. We care for each other by fighting neoliberalism and demanding public structures of care where workers can have a union and a pension, by creating tenant unions, supporting workers fighting for their humanity to be respected. We offer care when we remind each other to rest. I'm grateful beyond words for everyone in Chicago, the country, and the world who chooses to care, who organizes book clubs and coffee hours and movie nights so we can be together as community, like my beautiful comrades in the 33rd Ward Working Families. This system is ugly and ruthless, and it's been the time of monsters for a long time. We need each other so much. And as long as we are disciplined about rooting our working class hearts in the memory of collective struggle, community, solidarity, and resistance, I am convinced that there will be hope. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rosanna. Our next speaker is going to be Nada Elia. Just please give it up. Nada teaches in the Department of Ethnic Studies at Western Washington University. She is the author of Greater Than the Sum of Our Parts, Feminism, Internationalism, and Palestine. Palestine, Un Feminisme de Liberación, and is currently completing Falsiniyat, A Century of Palestinian Feminisms, forthcoming from Verso in 2025. Nada is a member of the Palestinian Feminist Collective, former president of the Association for Middle East Women's Studies, and has previously served on the steering committee of INCITE, Feminists of Color Against Violence, and the Arab Women's Solidarity Association. Please give it up for Nada.
Thank you, everyone, for being here. And I want to start by sincerely thanking the organizers for planning such a solid Palestine track that did not ghettoize us, that placed us alongside other aspects of the struggle as part of the struggle. I believe that everyone here understands Palestine as an anti-racism, anti-colonial struggle. It's also an anti-carceral struggle, an anti-militarism struggle, a struggle against environmental devastation, a struggle for indigenous rights, a struggle for labor rights, a disability rights struggle, and so much more. And it is, first and foremost, an indigenous decolonial feminist struggle. You don't need to clap because I have to finish within 10 minutes. I'll take your clapping at the end. It is only right that Palestine should be placed alongside other struggles, as the struggles enabling the genocide in Palestine are connected with the oppressive systems that targeting communities of color and marginalized communities here and elsewhere. It is through our understanding that we are in the same struggle, the same struggles, plural, that we will achieve liberation. Because of that, it is important that we not exceptionalize Palestine. In a way, exceptionalizing Palestine is fully understandable, not because the circumstances of my people and homeland are exceptional, they are not, but because our oppressor, Israel, has been exceptionalized. Israel is exceptionally anachronistic as a country still in the early stages of settler colonialism within the 21st century. It is exceptionalized because it is enacting today what we witnessed 4 and 5 centuries ago, which has since been deemed wrong, if not necessarily redressed. It is exceptionalized because it is actively engaged in an amply documented genocide that the world institutions designed to prevent and stop such crimes cannot curtail, and it is literally getting away with genocide. One particular way that Israel is exceptionalized is through the discourse on sexual violence. The mainstream media and most politicians are still expressing outrage at the allegations of rape that allegedly happened on October 7, allegations that have in some cases been completely debunked and remain otherwise unsubstantiated. Of course, sexual violence and rape are never, ever acceptable. But then again, if they are never, ever acceptable, then why accept them when Israel is the perpetrator? Yep. We have amply documented reports of Israel's systemic sexual violence against Palestinians since before 1948. Rape has been used as a weapon of war by Israel. It has been used in the torture of prisoners. It has been used to obtain confessions under torture. It has been and continues to be used as a threat. It is rampant in official Israeli policy, and yet Israel is so exceptionalized that we have so-called feminists who are outraged at the allegations of Hamas rape of Israeli women, who have not uttered a word about the century of Zionist rape of Palestinian women, children, boys, men, and the overall sexual violence Israel imposes on the Palestinian people. So let me make this clear. If your feminism is outraged at debunked allegations of mass rapes of Israeli women, but not at the amply documented reports of Israel's systematic sexual violence against Palestinian girls, women, men, and gender non-conforming individuals since the 1940s into the present, then you should revisit your definition of feminism. If your feminism does not include babies and children in Gaza, you're not a feminist.
Yes.
But I'll say more. If your feminism does not include conservative, adult, Muslim men in Gaza, men whose dignity Israel seeks to violate every day, men who are picking up the broken pieces of their family members' starved and burnt and maimed bodies, men who take up arms to liberate Palestine by any and all means necessary, if your feminism doesn't include these survivors who make us Palestinian feminists proud, then you're not my ally. Just as Harriet Tubman did not ask for the credentials of the enslaved people she was freeing, we should not look for the perfect victim as we liberate Palestine. All Palestinians must be free, or Palestine will not be free. Israel has been exceptionalized, but Palestine is not exceptional. If you're a prison abolitionist, Palestine should also be your cause. If you're a reproductive justice activist, Palestine should be your cause. If you support refugee rights, if you're a feminist, if you're anti-racist, if you're decolonial, Palestine is your cause. Palestine should be your cause, just as Palestinians here in the far diaspora organize with our interconnected struggles, like prison abolition and refugee and migrant justice, and we organize around these causes. And for those of us in the diaspora, we need to be very intentional about using the current focus on Palestine to uplift other struggles, other genocides, because the genocide of the Palestinian people is not exceptional. It is not the only genocide going on today. The genocide of the indigenous people is ongoing on Turtle Island. There are genocides in Rwanda, in Sudan, in Myanmar, and those are also part of our struggle against genocide. Yeah. We are complicit in the genocide of the Palestinians, and we need to end the bloodshed that in Palestine has gone on for way too long. Israel's genocidal assault on the Palestinian people did not start on October 8, 2023. It started 76 years ago, and we need to end that. So I'm going to conclude with a call to action. As Israel's genocide of the Palestinian people intensifies, accelerates, spreads from Gaza to the West Bank, we need to do more. Last week, I saw a post on social media which reads, CBS poll shows 61% of Americans oppose weapons aid to Israel's assault on Gaza. 77% of Democrats and 63% of self-identifying moderates reject U.S. weapons aid to Israel. 77% of under 30 oppose weapons aid to Israel. 75% of black Americans, 66% of women, 56% of white college grads oppose weapons to Israel. This poll is absolute bullshit. Oppose is a verb, not an attitude. If we truly had 61% of Americans opposing weapons aid to Israel, the U.S. would stop sending aid to Israel. Opposition is not a thought we ponder. It should be action. When we say free Palestine, we don't mean free as an adjective. It is a verb, a command, an imperative. Similarly, if we oppose weapons to Israel, we should be opposing them actively. For that, we need to come together. We need to show that we have the numbers that CBS is telling us about. We need to be creative in shifting the balance of power in every context that we function in. One concrete action, because I do want to give concrete action, one concrete action that you can all take today is support the work of to free Palestinian political prisoner Khalid Ajarar. And I'm a member of the Palestinian Feminist Collective, and the Palestinian Feminist Collective is working on this prison abolitionist campaign to free Khalid Ajarar. Khalid Ajarar is a Palestinian revolutionary feminist abolitionist thinker. She has been imprisoned on and off for over 6 years in the past few years. She has currently been transferred from one prison into solitary confinement, and there is a global campaign to free her, and the Palestinian Feminist Collective has issued a statement on our website, Palestinian Feminist Collective. Please go there. Please sign it. Please sign it. We really want to launch with 1,000 signatures if we can. So please, by all means, go there, sign it, share. It's a prison abolitionist campaign against the Palestinian Feminist political prisoner abolitionist. Okay, so among the... Okay, now I go back. But sign the petition. Among the many things Palestinians have taught the world are two wonderful concepts, Intifada and Sumud. Intifada is the shaking off of oppression, and Sumud is perseverance. Both of these are critically important. We need a global intifada to liberate Palestine, because the oppression of Palestine, the slaughter of Palestinians, this genocide, is not done only by Israel. It is a global oppression. It is global sponsors. So we do need a global intifada. And we are witnessing many signs of this global intifada. We absolutely need Sumud. We would not be here without the steadfast perseverance of our people and of our allies. Thank you, those of you who have been in the movement for as long as some of us have been in the movement. Thank you. That is also Sumud and perseverance. But it is time to move from Sumud to active opposition. Our Sumud has sustained us to this day, but we need to do more than persevere, more than survive. We actually need to thrive. For that, just as we understand that free Palestine is a command, we must understand that opposing aid to Israel is an action verb. If your opposition to the genocide is simply a state of mind, if your opposition to genocide is simply wearing a keffiyeh, if your opposition to genocide is no more than a thought that you ponder, then I'm sorry to say it is no more effective than thoughts and prayers to end school shootings. Free Palestine is a verb. Oppose aid to Israel is a directive. And the genocide is an imperative. Thank you.
Intifada.
From the river to the sea.
Intifada.
Thank you, everyone, and thank you, Nada, and thank you for that call to action. Our next speaker is Barbara Ransby. Please give it up for Barbara. Dr. Barbara Ransby is a widely acclaimed historian of the Black Freedom Movement. She's an award-winning author and longtime activist. She is a professor in the Department of Black Studies, Gender and Women's Studies, and History at the University of Illinois at Chicago. She also directs the Social Justice Initiative, which promotes connections between academics and community organizers working on social justice. She is the author of multiple books, including the award-winning Ella Baker and the Black Freedom Movement, a radical radical democratic vision, Encelada, The Large and Unconventional Life of Mrs. Paul Robeson, and Making All Black Lives Matter, Reimagining Freedom in the 21st Century. She is a longtime she's also a longtime an organizer and feminist activist. Please welcome Dr. Barbara Ransby.
How are y'all doing? You hear me? You had a good conference? You exhilarated? You energized? You ready to fight? You ready to organize? All right. Well, thank you for coming out this afternoon. And it's been such a rich conference. I've been in and out and watching on the live stream. And so after, you know, Laura Kiswani and the Dream Defenders and Lena O'Day and Ruthie Gilmore, you know, my job is kind of easy, you know. And the co-panelists I have here, you know, ditto, ditto, ditto. I will try to add a few things. The task that we were offered for this panel is both clear and complex. It was suggested that we talk about how to build movements to thicken relationships and deepen solidarities and grow a force for lasting liberation. That's no small task. But the task in front of us has to be layered and long-term. There is no single shining path, or no sendero luminoso, as the Peruvian communists used to say. The question we have to ask always is, who is the we and what is winning? We cannot afford the luxury of isolation in this moment. We have to be expansive in our we, and we have to build mass movements. We have to struggle with people in rooms much bigger than this. We have to have the patience and perseverance to debate with people with whom we disagree. And we have to walk and chew gum politically at the same time, which means we have to fight on multiple fronts. Before I go further, though, let me say a word about Gaza. Echoing everything that Nada just said and many of the comments that have been made throughout this conference, Gaza is the most gut-wrenching moral litmus test of our time. I've been involved in Palestinian solidarity work for a while. In the anti-apartheid movement as a student, we learned about the Palestinian struggle from our comrades in the African National Congress, with comparisons made between South African apartheid and apartheid in Palestine, but also the interconnectedness between the South African racist regime and the Israeli regime were clear to us. As a historian of the Black Freedom Movement, I read and learned about the history of the Black Panther Party and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and even people like Jesse Jackson, who were clear, outspoken supporters of the Palestinian liberation struggle. And Reverend Jackson, with whom I agree on many things and disagree on some things, but was there for the ceasefire vote in the city council that Rosanna talked about. So there is a consistent, persistent Black solidarity movement in solidarity with Palestine. I had the privilege of going on a women of color, indigenous and women of color delegation to Palestine in 2011, which was eye-opening for me because much of what I had read and talked to Palestinian Americans about became vivid and visceral for me in that moment, and it has never left me. So as we stand here on the 10th anniversary of the Ferguson Uprising, in which we also saw reciprocal solidarity between people fighting against racism and white supremacy and racial capitalism and police violence on the streets of Ferguson, we heard echoes of solidarity, voices of solidarity, lessons about how to resist from people on the streets in Palestine. But with all this struggle and suffering in this moment, we have to understand the uniqueness of this moment. We have to understand that we also have a unique responsibility to stand up, to speak out, to refuse, and to resist. If we can look at the gut-wrenching scenes of what's happening in Gaza and not speak out immediately and with conviction, then what are we being set up to accept? If we can look at the crushing of hospitals, if we can look at the murder and massacre of children, all of it playing out on our television screens with a commentary that is dissonant, right? A commentary, a caption that is dissonant with what we are seeing. We are seeing genocide unfold. And history will ask the question, where did we stand? Did we stand ambivalently? Did we stand on the sidelines? Did we stand quietly? Or did we stand with conviction and fortitude and fearlessness? And it has to be the latter. It has to be the latter. So there's a lot of ways in which we can resist. Nada suggested a new campaign, which we should all learn about and support and sign up for. But we also have a unique responsibility because of the relationship of the United States to what is happening in Gaza, to the billions of dollars that go to purchasing 2,000-pound bombs, to the lies that we are told in the mainstream media. We have to make that not in our name mean something in very concrete terms. We have to also support our heroic young people who have been leading the way on college campuses, but also in detention centers here and in Palestine and other places around the world. So back to the question of who is we. We have to be connected to not only the struggle in Palestine, but struggles in Haiti, struggles in Sudan, struggles on the south side of Chicago, struggles linking us to and in support of the hotel workers in Unite Here, who did a one-day strike on Labor Day while we were meeting here. And we have to grow the we. We don't have the luxury to be isolated. We don't have the luxury to be sectarian, and we don't have the luxury to be cynical. We have to understand the interrelatedness of these struggles, and we have to root out those things within our movements that stand in the way of us being stronger, bigger, and more resolute. We have to struggle against sexism and patriarchal violence and homophobia and transphobia, not only in the society, but also inside our movements, and we have to do some truth-telling about that when it's required, because all of this is related. It's related to building a road to socialism. It's related to building a road to liberation. And we have to hold all of that at the same time. We know it's the logics of domination, the logic of racial gender capitalism, the logic of empire and settler colonialism that stand in our way. And in working and thinking, we have to make the direct connections, for example, between Gaza and Georgia, right? The Stop Cop City movement in Georgia right now is suffering intense repression. This is a dress rehearsal of things to come. And that movement was so dangerous because it was linking environmental justice, defense of the earth, right, with resistance to a growing carceral state. And that's why it was such a threat. And that's why the authorities and the elites in Atlanta are being so ruthless in their persecution of these comrades. But we have to see the direct lines there. We have to remember how Israeli security forces train police in this country. Just as we knew and exposed the connections between the South African regime in the 1970s and 80s with the Israeli state, we have to expose those connections right now. We have to both respond to what MLK once said in his radical, when he was, conveying his more radical self. He talked about the fierce urgency of now. We have to do that. We have to talk about the fierce urgency of now, the acuteness and uniqueness of this historical moment, at the same time that we embrace and fight for a long-term vision. We have to have our hatred of our enemies not exceed the love that we have for our people, because that ultimately will sustain us. I'm going to say that again. The hatred of our enemy, it is not the hatred of our enemy, but the love of our people that will sustain us. So we have to talk about, and many people in this room, faces I'm looking at in the first row, have taught us this, that it is not enough to abolish, but we have to also build. It is not enough to decolonize, but we have to design what is yet to come. It is not enough to defeat fascism at the polls, but to create the basis for alternatives and an end to racial gendered capitalism and a truly radical democratic socialist vision. So it is our task going forward from here to fight, to organize, and to build. As we do so, we remember the past as we fight for the future. We remember the martyrs and the freedom fighters who came before us, and we fight like hell for the children and for children yet to be born. And when we say free, free Palestine, we have to understand that it's not an act of charity, it's not a gesture of generosity, but rather it is to free ourselves. So free, free Palestine, free ourselves. Free, free Palestine, free ourselves. Free, free Palestine, free ourselves.
Free ourselves.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Barbara. Our final speaker will be Janine Yazzie. Janine is an enrolled member of the Navajo Nation and Director of Policy and Outreach for the NDN Collective, an Indigenous-led organization dedicated to building Indigenous power. Please welcome Janine.
How does one even begin to follow all that? I made the mistake of not writing down all the thoughts that were in my head, and so let's see where this goes. I have to first start with gratitude. I know I'm just lightly into my auntie phase, but it wasn't that long ago in my lifetime where it was rare to come into spaces where people not only started with land acknowledgments, but where you see Indigenous peoples represented throughout the conversations, where you see a shared commitment to name settler colonialism and colonialism as the root cause of many of the issues that we are fighting, and where people are acknowledging both the historic and ongoing genocide being carried out against Indigenous peoples here in the United States. And I hate that we had to witness a real genocide being played out in the palms of our hands and across social media to really bring those connections to the forefront, but that's where we are. And even though I still carry the grief and the sadness that I know many of you do, I still hold also gratitude because we have come so much further than even the last few years in understanding how our liberation is tied into one another. It's been particularly disheartening this last year, this election cycle, and all of the circus that comes around that. We've been bombarded with the messaging about the rise of fascism, the rise of white supremacy, the crisis of democracy, the need to vote to save our democracy. Choose the lesser evil, please, and it's blue. But relatives, we've been here before. We have heard this before. And we have seen how all of that fear-mongering, all of that misguided and, I don't even know what to call it, disillusioned, cognitive dissonance, whatever it may be, how our revolution is never going to be won through a ballot box. I'm a Diné woman, a proud Diné woman, and a mother, and a daughter. I come from peoples who have fought off two waves of colonialism, first the Spanish and then the Americans, and are currently fighting two new waves, one of neocolonialism and one of nuclear colonialism. So I mean it when I say we know we have been here before. And what I mean by that is that revolution is our birthright and our medicine. In a world still plagued by the violence of these systems and institutions, by the global elite that have lost their humanity a long time ago, revolution is our birthright. I think of our late sister, Maya Angelou, who has said something that I say to my kids a lot, actually. You may encounter many defeats, but you must never be defeated. In fact, it may be necessary to encounter the defeat so you can know who you are and what you can rise from and how you can still come out of it. And so despite how heavy everything may be and everything and all the battlefronts that we are currently on, all the front lines that exist in every space we can imagine, I want to call us in to reflect on what we have done so far and what we have created, because we are not in the same starting point as we have been in previous generations. We have people who have built extensive networks to support our immigrant relatives and migrant relatives to ensure their safety no matter where they're at and where they land. We have workers who have built solidarity and unions and have organized to fight for different forms of work, to fight against the worst parts of the capitalist system that we are against, and to ensure a better quality of life for their people while still contributing to building a better society for us all. We have seen the enormous lift that has been undertaken by those who fight for prison abolition, like bringing in new hope in a conversation where people couldn't before imagine a world without prisons. We have seen the extraordinary work of many people creating an intersectional movement to fight for racial justice and to expand that beyond thinking about equity in an unjust system, but looking at true liberation for all of our people. And we have seen across all of our communities what exactly we are capable of when all those skills come together, when we were all faced with a global pandemic and created response systems faster than the governments that had all the power and resources to do so, to develop mutual aid networks that kept our people safe. And we have seen and learned over as we've been witnessing the horrors that have been visited upon our Palestinian relatives, the strength and fortitude and grace and dignity that they carry, reminding us that many of us come from that legacy of our ancestors as well. And we have learned in building new networks of solidarity how long our Palestinian relatives have been working with many of our different movement spaces, whether it's fighting surveillance and policing and fighting for abolition, or whether it's on many different Native reservations where they came to provide skill sharing for direct action as we fought for our treaty rights and for our right for self-determination. We have a long history of resistance with our Palestinian relatives. And our indigenous peoples, my indigenous peoples, have a special love for them because I know that no matter how many battles we've been fighting simultaneously all at once, while still creating spaces to heal from historical trauma and reclaim our historical and ancestral strengths, and while dealing with the legacy of all of the oppression and violence of empire in our homelands, that we have still managed to preserve 80% of the world's remaining biological diversity. We have still managed to restore entire food systems that are the answer to our unsustainable food practices around the globe. We have still managed to build schools that are teaching our children our traditional life ways and worldviews and languages that were supposed to be annihilated and wiped off from this earth. And we are still sharing skills with all of our accomplices and our comrades who are ready and prepared to fight against empire. All of these things are being shown and demonstrated to us, coming together from all of our movements, these skills, these philosophies, the political analysis, the values that we all hold in what we're witnessing with the student encampments. They are witness to the power that we have, and there are the beneficiaries of it. At Indian Collective, we believe the best days of our lives, the best days of our people are in front of us and not behind us. And so I leave you all with the remembering that with everything that we have done, even though many times it feels like we are losing more than not, with everything we do and with everything we create, with every small win that we have made, when we have done it rooted in our love and our revolution, we find ourselves coming closer together. Imagine what our ancestors could have accomplished together if they had the relationships and tools that we have today. How might they have changed things? Look around, because they're here today. They're with us, whether we agreed with them or not, and the role they played historically. We bring them to this room so that we can not only fight for our future, we can fight to heal our past. So love radically, fight fearlessly to be free, as was reminded to us, is an action. And know that Indigenous peoples will be there every step of the way, fighting for our land back, fighting for the freedom of our longest living political prisoner, Leonard Peltier. and fighting for our right to protect all of sacred life so that we can all be free. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you like this episode, subscribe to our podcast and to the Haymarket Books YouTube channel, where events like this one are hosted live. And don't forget to check out haymarketbooks.org.